You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. Mikel Arteta fumes after Arsenal dropped 3 points in a controversial 1-0 loss at Newcastle. Luis Diaz comes off the bench and scores a late equaliser to rescue a point for Liverpool at Luton Town. Bruno Fernandes scores another late winning goal for Man United as they get the 1-0 victory at the Cottage. And Jeremy Doku provides a performance for the ages as Manchester City deal a 6-1 drubbing to Bournemouth. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode. All right, Robbie Earle, my friend, a little weekend off for you. Sure you enjoyed all the festivities and all the action and the goals and the controversy.
Thank you very much.
And we're all waiting to know what you feel about some of these big incidents. Of course, the topic suggested there, Rob, we are going to start at the top of that list and the top of the weekend stories, really. Newcastle United 1-0 victory over Arsenal. Anthony Gordon scores, I guess, midway through the second half in a highly controversial goal. Yeah. I think we should just cut to the chase, Rob, on it. I'll give a little bit of background here on it. Of course, you know, there was three parts to the winning goal that was under review from the video assistant referee. Did the ball go over the line before Callum Wilson gathered it? He then crossed it to the back post where there was a challenge at the back post. It was Joe Ellington on Gabriel. The ball then falls to the ground where Anthony Gordon sticks it in. Was there a foul at the back post? Was Gordon offside? Yeah. Two of those three, Rob, and I don't think we need to kind of get into... We had it from the Pedro Moel, that the over-the-line, non-conclusive angle, disappointingly. Yeah. They haven't got the angles to confirm that there's definitely over the line, so the on-field kind of decisions went. And the same with the third part there, Rob, where... Again, because of the location of the players and the ball, it was difficult to draw any lines to see if Gordon was behind the ball, of course, keeping him onside. So, okay, this is not ideal, by the way, and it frustrates everybody that the technology still is not foolproof on that. I guess we've got to live with that. Yeah. But the piece in between, Rob, the push is where... Uh-huh. There's varying degrees of disagreement from former pros. And I always, of course, I always value what the pundits, what the former pros feel of a particular challenge. In the studio, I felt like, and I'll say it again, that Joe Ellington was guilty of pushing Gabriel. As Gabriel bent down to head the ball away, he felt the force of the body of Joe Ellington and the two arms on his back to really lean him, to push him over in some way. For me, it was a foul. And for me, again, just to clarify, I think it was a clear and obvious error by the officials not to give that as a foul. But of course, it wasn't given. Yeah. And VAR said there's no clear and obvious error with that. And again, before I get your take on it, Rob, of what I've seen and heard and listened and read, about half and half. You know, a lot of the UK pundits thought it was fine. Mm. A lot of the US-based ones I've listened to thought it was a foul. I thought it was a foul. Tim didn't think it was a foul. I want you to do it in two stages, Rob. If it was a clear and obvious error, I want your answer on that. And then if we were re-refereeing it, what would you have given it, you know, if you're the referee in that moment?
Okay, so is it a clear and obvious error? I believe it is. Why I say that, Robin, I try and always try and put myself in those situations. I'm thinking I'm Joe Ellington in that situation. And that ball's coming across and I want to head it in. And I kind of see that if I don't if I don't nudge Gabriel, Gabriel's going to head that ball away from me, right?
It's a great shot.
So I'm going to try and nudge him in a way that's just going to ease him off the ball. I'm going to get the header and we're going to score.
It's a great shout.
Now, because of that push, because what happens with it, and this is where I think Joe Ellington doesn't really head the ball in the end, Rob.
Because he can't get to it.
He realises that the ball's He can't get to it because Gabriel's there. The ball's dropping in front of him. And if anything, there is a question, and also, I don't even want to show any more around this VAR, but there's argument that it maybe hit his arm. It hit his arm, Rob, before he fell to Gordon, before he smashes it in. But let's leave that to aside for another day, another VAR discussion. Let's just go. So, for me, I'm thinking, I know I've been Joe Ellington in that situation. I realise... I'm not going to get this unless I'm going to nudge him and I'm going to get my hands away. I'm going to make it not look too obvious. And it's a foul. It's a foul on the defender to allow you to... And sometimes, Rob, I've got away with them. I've probably had three or four times in my career where I thought, cool, you didn't have to get away with that one. I give him a bit of a nudge and the referee's let it go. I think with VAR and with that situation to look at it again, I think that's the one. Now... It's interesting because obviously Arsenal have come out with a big statement today backing Mikel Arteta, and you know his words used like disgraceful and it's embarrassment and how sick he was. And I understand a lot of his emotions. In some respects, I think Mikel Arteta maybe did himself and his club a little bit of disservice. And I'm not being overcritical, but if he'd have said, you know what, the one that whether the ball's in or out, that's inconclusive. Whether he's offside, that's inconclusive. But focused attention on the foul, I think that's where people would have... Because some people are still saying, oh, the ball's in. Yeah, because the ball's out, sorry. Because, you know, we see a picture where there looks like a bit of line. And because of the shape of the ball and sphere and the hangover, we know that that's inconclusive. Mm. The same with the pictures of whether he's onside or not. And some are suggesting he's behind the ball, so it doesn't really matter. And inconclusive. But the one key area where Arsenal have a huge argument for a foul on the defender before the goal scored is the Gabriel incident, and that's my feeling. That was my feeling when I first saw it. It's my feeling as I see more replays. It's my feeling as I stick myself in that situation, Rob, and know I've kind of been that guy. For me, I think Arsenal were a little harshly done by that the goal was allowed to stand. And they end up losing the game 1-0.
Rob, that's such a different and interesting take on that, putting yourself in Joe Ellington's shoes. Because I did hear a take from a friend of ours, Gary Neville, over in the UK, Sky, excellent pundit Gary Neville, who put himself in the defender's shoes, Rob. And he was saying, you know, I've been there many times where I'm bending down, I'm leaning forward, I want to flick the ball out, It doesn't work out, and I throw myself forward and I kick my legs out to get the foul. So he's describing it when he's been a defender and thinks that I've messed up here and I'm going to make it look like a foul. Yeah. So it's so interesting. I can throw in the other angle, and I relate more to that, and it makes more sense of when I see a player, Rob, his body is in the line of Gabriel, his arms are on his back. And I'll relate it in a different way, Rob. In terms of what deserves to be a penalty, so many little tiny touches of feet in the box, I'm like, really? Is that a penalty? It seems soft. Yeah. So if you put the same kind of, well, sometimes it's only a little touch, two arms on the back that adds some kind of force would have to compare with a tiny little touch of feet in the box that we see given all the time. So I'm with you, and I had no idea.
Ask Gary O'Neill at Wolves, mate.
Yeah.
Ask Gary O'Neill at Wolves. Yeah, well, he's hardly had no contact. Yeah, had hardly any contact.
So that's interesting, mate. And I want to just
it's a really good point.
Yeah, just we're on the same thing, Rob. And this is where I felt even stronger about this, right? And I'll try not to make it seem like a rant, but the behaviour of Bruno Guimarães, okay, So for me, first off, the run behind a player and the striking of the head with his forearm, which is not it's a hard part of his arm, and you can see the head jolt forward. There's significant force in that. It should have been a red card, right? That's one thing for VAR that they didn't think it was. Yeah. And then there was various others where remember when Jorginho played the ball and he shoved him deliberately to the ground.
He pushed him, which he did get
a yellow card. Yeah. So two things, Rob.
Yeah.
Obviously, I want your opinion on whether you think it's a straight red from VAR on that elbow to the head. Yeah. Also, Didn't we used to see a few years ago, Rob, where the fourth official, where the referee's assistant with a flag would sort of flag it and say, well, hang on a minute, referee, he's just cuffed him in the head.
Yeah. Like, have you seen that?
I've seen it. Let's have a chat. And the referee would go over to him and he'd give him a yellow or a red card based on one of his assistants and what they'd seen. That absolutely is part of the laws, and the officials can get opinion off everybody around there. They've stopped doing that. As if, like, well, VAR says everything now. I don't need to tell him about that. And I think that's when yellow card offences are missed. And the way that Bruno stayed in the game there, based on that and the big challenge with the elbow, I just think...
A couple of other... God, yeah, he smashes the ball at
Havertz. Smashes him at Havertz.
It was almost as though the referee had set a standard where he was not... He was going to not really go and be disciplined with the players, Rob. So, as a player, you get the sense of that. So, Bruno kind of knew he was right. And I go back to the point where the Kai Havertz challenge is a lucky yellow. I think that could have been upgraded as red. Now, because if he doesn't upgrade that to a red, I think Bruno stays on the pitch because of the things he does. If Kai Havertz had got a red card, which I don't think he'd have an awful lot of argument, Rob, if it was a red, I think Bruno might well have got sent off yesterday then. Because I think the referee would have thought, hold on, I've got Mikel Arteta... Mikel Arteta shouting down at me every time on the touchline. I've put them down to 10 men. But that shouldn't excuse that Bruno Fernandes could have probably had 4 or 5 yellow cards yesterday.
Do you think the elbow was out of control before half-time. Was it a red for you, Rob, the elbow to the back
elbow was big enough to be a straight red, Rob. Yeah. The elbow to the head was big enough to be a straight red card. There was no reason, Rob, for his elbow to be there to catch the player in that manner. There's absolutely no reason.
Yeah,
and so you have no argument. I know Eddie Howe's got a bit of, you know, he doesn't see some and he does see some, and Mikel Arteta's not much better. You know, it was a case where I thought both players, I thought Havertz and Bruno Guimarães could both have got red cards in the game.
Let me just go back to that.
Can I add, Rob, though?
Okay, you add before I come back.
No, you finish off because mine's a bit more of a general
different
point.
Okay, I think the Kai Havertz thing's important, Rob, because... You know, covering the game, you know, we saw it. We had tons of looks at it. It was, by the way, a super wild challenge. There was a moment where his studs were really, really high. And then he kind of lands on the ground and his feet then are lower, not a ton of contact. So that's where I was like, it's an awful challenge, but just yellow card's okay for me. And maybe we didn't, you know, I think on social media, you know, we do check that stuff and try and gauge, you know, the feeling out there generally. And maybe, you know, I think a lot of people were saying, well, what about the Havertz challenge? And maybe we didn't talk about it enough. So it's good that you brought it up and I wanted to ask you about it anyway.
Yeah.
And I thought it was close, but again, I can't, and I know the frustration from the Arsenal fans, from the Newcastle fans in terms of keep going on at Bruno, I just didn't think there was enough. I mean, they take about the one of the factors is the contact point. Where the contact is with the studs, is it up the shin? Is it down by the foot? Down by the ground, which is less dangerous apparently? And I just thought it was one of those. But I'm pleased that we chatted about it because I think the Newcastle fans are like, well, and all about it's Bruno, they should have had a red card as well. So, again, I'm not changing my opinion on what I think it was the right call on that. But, maybe it was closer and you're sounding like you thought it was closer to a red card than maybe I did.
I thought it was close to a red card. I thought it was a little bit lucky. Yeah. And I didn't know why he needed to do it or what, you know, and...
His head went. Rush of blood. It was a crazy challenge.
There was things. And leads me to my point, Rob. And as a neutral, sitting on my sofa with my cup of tea, watching you, Bex, and Tim doing your stuff and watching the game. And do you know what, mate? There's nothing quite like this league. Honestly. You know, in a game that didn't have loads of goal-scoring opportunities, wasn't brilliant football for both teams. Two teams who will be probably top six, possibly top four challenging. What a brilliant watch, mate. Intense, competitive, physical, abrasive, commitment. Both teams trying to play, trying to get each other. Two coaches, young coaches, at it at the touchline. It just encompasses it. And it was really funny because what was happening... It's not a slight at all on the Bundesliga, but it was a big game in Germany, wasn't it? It was Bayern versus Dortmund, and Harry Kane's got his hat-trick and all that. And I think they were showing... I saw little clips of Harry's goals in the game, and And I'm looking at what's going on at St James's Park, and I'm going, that's what makes a Premier League the best, Rob. There's that fight, scrap, you know, against two teams who really want to play, who can play, who want the ball, who can create chances. But on a day when it wasn't about that, it was about rolling your sleeves up, it was about not giving an inch, it was about putting your foot in, it's about winning tackles and duels, and eventually we get the VAR and we get a goal. It's such a great... This league is such a fantastic action-packed league that we're talking about a 1-0 game with a goal that was scrappy and could have gone lots of different ways. It was one of the games of the season for me.
Yeah, it was, Rob. And you know, just to follow on that point, you know, my slight doubt about Arsenal was because we know how Newcastle play. That's no surprise. That atmosphere, that energy, that physicality. Yeah. I mean, Joe Ellington, I mean, I wouldn't want to play against him in midfield. He's a big guy. They got tons of physicality everywhere.
Declan Rice is a beast in another way as well. He's a football beast, by the way, Declan Rice.
He was incredible.
I mean, his energy, Rob, is incredible. His energy is incredible.
And that's going to be, I think that's going to be his role, Rob. I think it's going to be his role, the Granit Xhaka slash meant to be Kai Havertz role, the left side of those three in midfield. I think he's going to. I think he's so good. I mean, obviously they wish they could have two Declan Rices. They want a number eight Declan and they want a number six Declan because he can do both. But given that left sided situation and how good he is getting forward, the energy he's got, driving the ball forward, helping defensively, Jorginho, who needs that help in midfield, he was absolutely perfectly good. But I just wanted to go on, Rob, and credit Arsenal, because right from that first thunderous challenge when William Saliba went in on Joe Ellington, I mean, I thought Arsenal physically, they matched Newcastle, Rob, and I didn't know whether they could do that. They were prepared to go, I don't know, in each other's faces, to match that physicality. I think that's what upset Mikel Arteta so much, that after all that, they still end up on the losing the side because his team gave everything. And my respect for that team and the way that this club is and the team is evolving, that's an important part of being champions. You know, we all know about City. They got plenty of muscle and pace and power in different parts of that side. And I just was impressed with Arsenal's ability to live with some of that and to stomach some of those decisions.
Yeah.
And also in the face of some over the top, I thought, particularly from Bruno. I know that Havertz was an over the top challenge as well. I just was impressed. I know they lost the game. I know the Arsenal fans are still bitter. I still believe that the referee, it really hurt Arsenal. With a Bruno, should have been a red card, and with a foul in the back, for me, my opinion was they got really burnt there by the officials. But well done in so many aspects of that performance, physical-wise, Rob. Yeah. I thought they kind of grown from last year.
Yeah, I've got a similar point. My note on Arsenal as a team is I don't think they're quite as fluid as they were last season, Rob. I don't think we've seen that groove football quite at the level.
No, not yet.
But there's more fight about them.
Yeah.
Less fluid, more fight. And you know what? To win a title, to hang in there, as they may need to do if they get down the stretch again, it augurs quite well for them. I thought it was a day, Rob, if I'm being honest, where they lacked a little edge in the top end of the pitch. And I hate to do this because I kind of feel like we're not giving this guy a chance. But he's the okey-cokey player. Is he in or is he out? It's Eddie Nketiah, my friend. The wonderful hat-trick last weekend, I think we might have given him an underappreciated and can he do this? And then you see days, Rob, where it just doesn't quite happen for Eddie.
Yeah, I agree with that, Rob. And maybe as we finish off this game, Rob, let's just pull out a few individuals, mate. Yeah. And I'm going to start with my underappreciated performer of the weekend, Rob. And I got so much respect for this player and what he's done since getting back into the Newcastle United team. It's Jamal Lascelles, the captain of Newcastle United Club. Sven Botman has come in and taken his position in the side. You know, Lascelles is a bit of a Newcastle United legend, been around there for a long period of time, the club captain. And he's come in and had a long stint in the side and another very strong game from Lascelles. And, you know, we know he's not first choice, though he might be now going forward for a little while. Yeah. But in terms of, let's not forget how good he is and what a good defender Lascelles is and has been and continues to be, given, you know, he wants to stay at this club. He wants to keep going, where other players might have said, you know what, it's time for me to move on. I'm out the side right now. But I like his attitude, his character, and he was good. He was very, very big in this and, yeah. and helping, as you said, Edin Keita not have a, yeah. have a brilliant game. So my underperformer goes to Jamal Lascelles.
It's good, great shout. And to be honest, mate, I have to say, you got in there before me, because if I had a chance, he was going to be mine. And, right. and for two reasons, for all the things that you've said. But my second reason was, Rob, and it's a bit more of a focus on what you started with, squad players in professional, in Premier League football now, Rob, it must be the most difficult job. When you're Jamal Lascelles and can play like that, but most weeks you're going to train from Monday to Friday, you've got to sleep right, you've got to keep your diet, you've got to keep yourself in good shape, and most weekends you're not going to play. And then you probably play behind closed game door on Tuesday. You do a bit extra running on a Wednesday, keep your fitness. Yeah. You know, it's a really difficult role.
Much harder.
When you're not, it's the best job in the world when you're playing. Yeah. Best job in the world. There is none better. But when you're a squad player, and to be a squad player, but keep his attitude, his influence around the football club, apparently he's a big, has a big voice around the dressing room and make sure things are done right. And Eddie Howe's talked about it. He wants to keep him at the football club. I think it's a brilliant shout. And, mm-hmm. and it would have been my underappreciated performer of the week. Mm-hmm. Not only the way he's played, but the way he's conducted himself, you know, while he's not necessarily been a first-team player.
Anybody else to pick out, Rob? We talked about Declan Rice, talked about Eddie Nketiah, Jamal Lascelles. Anybody else? I mean, Anthony Gordon's kind of, you know, I know he got the winning goal, but
Anthony Gordon, yeah, he was another one.
Yeah.
That, you know, interesting with Anthony Gordon, because I watched the League Cup game midweek, Rob, and Anthony Gordon actually started as a centre-forward because Isak was out. They were wanting to save Wilson, and we know Wilson's injury issues. So they played him as a number nine, by the way. He did a great job.
Yeah.
He looked a better player than
good
Martial
player.
As a number
he's a,
nine
he's a good
for
signing.
Newcastle.
Mm.
He can play, and he's important, Rob. And he kind of came on my underappreciated, and I thought, well, maybe not doing two from the same club. But, you know, bought into the football club. People were like, oh,
a lot of money.
What's he do? You know, Harvey Barnes was coming. Thought, well, maybe, that'll be good now. He's become important to them, Rob. Mm. Anywhere across that front line, he can play either side. He can play centre forward. He's getting a few goals. He's getting confidence. Mm. And Eddie Howe's always said that there's more to come from Anthony Gordon. So, yeah, it was a good shout, Anthony Gordon, as well. You know, important goal, however lucky and what VAR didn't or didn't do, his goal, you know, was the difference between the two teams.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, Rob. That was, we had a good, it was such a dramatic game of football, and I agree with you. What a great advert for the Premier League in many, many ways. Some not so much, but most of them it really was. Next game, Rob, we want to chat about, and again, there was another game where, you know, you're seeing things that you can't quite believe. Luton Town 1, Liverpool Football Club 1. Goals from Taith Chong. Big signing for them, a summer signing for them, actually. Midfield player that came in, scores in the 80th minute. And then Luis Diaz, Rob, I mean, scores in the 90th plus a fifth minute of stoppage time.
Stories,
he was on a sub as in the 83rd minute.
Yeah.
You get started on this one.
Well, just an incredible game, Robin, and I suppose listening to Buck Jones after the game and took a couple of the Luton players who did interviews, and obviously saying that the feel was disappointment in that dressing room. And I was just trying to think, if that had gone the other way, if Liverpool had gone one up and then some, you know, Luton has somehow got a result, and you can imagine the scenes and the feeling would have been just so much different. And that's where, I mean, for Luton, Rob, to go 1-0 up against the Liverpool team for best part of it, to keep a clean sheet against that world-class front attack was like, it's incredible that what this league can do, what this league can offer. Mm. I couldn't quite believe it, to be honest, mate. Mm. The breakaway from the corner and the lovely finish by Chong and, you know, the noise, and that's what this team were fighting for. And what was it, 10 years ago they were in non-league, and now they're 1-0 up against Liverpool with minutes to go on the clock. Before, you know, Diaz and all the emotions around him and his parents and his father with the goal. I mean, geez, this thing just delivers storyline after storyline. A disappointment, I think, on reflection, Rob, it's got to be a disappointment for Liverpool.
It really
is. I thought Liverpool felt like erratic. They didn't look in control. They weren't clinical. Darwin Nunes, Rob, who I love, who I do feel they should persevere with. I wrote a line down about Darwin Nunes. There's times he looks like a Liverpool striker and there's times he looks like a Luton striker. Sometimes in the same moments.
Yeah, I mean, the miss is, I mean, you know, it's a comedy. It's just unexplainable, Rob. I mean, at this level, I thought you were going to say a pub player. Like, honestly, like a lower league. I mean, we're talking, you know, any professional player, that's an easy chance, let alone, you know, a player that's at one of the best clubs in the world and the teams in the world right now. So Darwin Nunes misses from 3 yards out with a side foot volley is just incredible. I mean, Mo Salah's missed before that was kind of surprising, but Mo Salah's Mo Salah. I hardly ever see him miss even a header like that. But that miss was absolutely incredible, Rob. And that is a defining moment of the game. That goes in, it's 1-0. Then we're seeing a different sort of game. Just quickly on Luton's goal, and it was a brilliant goal, by the way that Ross Barkley had the composure to bring the ball forward, realise somebody's right behind him, he feeds the ball out to Kabori on that left, the right-hand side, crosses it in for the goal-scoring moment there. A shout, and we were in the studio, as the VAR's gone up for a possible handball, we are thinking, here we go, this is it. This is where a goal is scored. And VAR is going to go way back, you're going to, sorry, Luton, you can't have that goal. There's a handball there. Yeah. It's a penalty to Liverpool. We're going to see that. We are going to see that at some point. I can't imagine what the fans, if that... Cool. And by the way, it wasn't a stonewall good call. It was. For me, it was not. I still think it was expected enough with his jump and the arms coming up and down. It definitely hits his arm. It's kind of in this 90-degree angle from his body. Did you any thought that you thought, wow, that should be given? I mean, we have seen similar ones given for that.
My biggest reaction was that all the Liverpool players that you see, all their arms going up, mate, and that made me think, wow, there must be something there. But I never saw a clear look, clear angle where I could say no. Benefit of the doubt, obviously, Luton, and such a moment for Luton. I mean, how could you take that moment away? It'd have been incredible. Mm. But no, that's got to go down as a disappointment to Luton. And let's not, you know, let's be frank about it. Most top six teams, most top four teams, most teams thinking of challenging for a title will believe they can go to the Kenny and win, Rob.
Yeah.
I know it's small, and I know it's this, and I know it's that, and we know the atmosphere and that, but most big six teams, Manchester City would go there and
Spurs won
to win.
There, Rob. Spurs went there and won, didn't they, earlier on, I think. I think they went to the Kenny and won Spurs back in October. I thought, Rob, at half-time, and, you know, you listen to the commentary, and Graham Lasso was sort of saying how sharp Liverpool looked and moving the ball. I was sat in the studio thinking, I don't know if I fully agree with that. I thought Liverpool looked a little casual. Yeah. I thought they looked like that this is going to be comfortable. We're in great form now. The players that we've got, we're going to win this game. I thought there's a little bit of complacency. I didn't see a lot of drive, quickness, intensity that we saw. I said to Tim in the studio in the last 10, 15 minutes, this Look at the difference of Liverpool now. Sprinting to balls, trying to get on the... And playing with more desperation. Yeah. Now, I know you can't play that or like that all the time, Rob, but did you feel in the first half, especially Liverpool, were like, you know, we're going to be okay here, we're possessing, we're in control, we had a couple of breaks. I mean, and to be fair, they did have chances to score. I thought they were a little casual,
The numbers
Rob.
Were good. 24 shots, Rob. I think it was 6 on target compared to Luton's 8 shots.
But great chances.
Although they had 5
I'm not
on
sure
target,
they, I'm
yeah.
not sure they created great chances.
Not great chances. Most from distance, and obviously Nunes had a handful. Probably had about 8 of them himself. But yeah, I know what you mean. Didn't quite have that killer. And you know, when we look at Liverpool, intensity of play, and you know, a midfield that can dominate the game, and then you've got a front three who you feel one of them's going to have a day. You know, Mo Salah scores and assists on a regular basis. Nunes is trying to find his feet. Jota, I mean, that's just not a level above. That's 5 or 6 levels above where Luton are at. So I'm just thinking, you know, somebody's going to take that hunger piece. It was almost a little bit Chelsea-esque, Rob, in some respects, where you know, get so far, but then there wasn't that killer. It didn't feel like that killer was there. Now, whether that was, you know, what's going on with the football club, the Diaz thing, we don't know if that's affected the whole dressing room. And obviously, you know, you feel for a teammate who they call a brother, and what's happening in his life for him to, you know, come on, scores another brilliant story. But I don't know. Yeah, it just felt like there wasn't quite that little hunger thing that makes, you know, Liverpool so different when they are intense, when they're you know, heavy metal masters and the monster mentality. The monster mentality wasn't quite there today.
Yeah, there's one player I want to mention, Liverpool, Rob. I just do want to finish off in terms of my comments on this game about Luton and what an incredible achievement it is, given the budget on this team, and they were one of the lowest budgets in the Championship last year. They have brought in a lot of new players, trying to make a new team, just bedding themselves in. I do think they've got a fighting chance of staying in the division. I know that. I know where they're at right now. They got a little bit of breathing room right now.
Remind me a bit of Forest, Rob, a bit like Notts Forest, that they can kind of get something together in the second half of the season.
Some foundation, And the last thing I want to say about the game,
Rob. Smart manager, smart coach.
My last comment is a 21-year-old player that I think showed some signs of class. Ryan Gravenberch. That new midfield player, the 21-year-old, they brought in from Bayern Munich for a good fee. The kind of finishes up the midfield transition, really. I thought there was moments where he looks like he's got a bit about him. And I just wanted to throw it out there right now. He maybe made a nice... It would have been assist if Jota scored in the first half. Good play from midfield. Yeah. Just a little nod to this guy that's playing now. And it kind of finishes up your McAllister, Gravenberch and Szoboszlai as the new-look midfield. It wasn't the Szoboszlai day. Yeah. And McAllister is going to be suspended now. He got a yellow card. But Gravenberch just thought he looked pretty useful. Just want to chuck that in at the end of this conversation.
Good shout. it's a good shout. As you say, that new midfield just gives him another option. He's got legs as well, hasn't he? He can go from box to box and drive with the ball, which just gives them another option on the boom. So, yeah, good shout. And Liverpool, I'm sure, will be disappointed having come away with a point, but they left it late, and the Diaz goal in the end is a point more than it looks with what minutes on the clock. Let's move it to the cottage, my friend, because I think this game, the early kick-off Saturday morning, had a lot of attention, not only for the game itself, but for Erik ten Hag, what was going on at the football club. You know, lots of talk about, is he the right man? Paper reports that, you know, that they're looking for new managers, possibly, that he's lost the dressing room. All kinds of shouts coming out, Rob, that I felt ten Hag, it was one of those days where maybe less said, more action was going to be the way. And his team found a way, mate. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't the best football. It wasn't anything that I think gives you loads of confidence, but it was a win, and it was 3 points, and that's what they needed.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's not a lot that in terms of performance, I mean, and I know the United fans at the moment, you know, the more important thing is the victory. Yeah. But the performance is still important, Rob, and that has got to improve. And I think we know that they've got special players to do things. Bruno Fernandes does it again, another late a meaningful goal from Bruno. I think there's been many of them recently where his goals
three.
Are winning.
He's had three goals this season of all won games.
I thought again, that was a moment of quality. Other than that, you know, Anthony again was dragged off. I think it was in the second half, wasn't it, where he's really struggling to have any impact on the game. Garnacho looked bright, you know. Rasmus Højlund looked frustrated, Rob being substituted again. So, you know, we still had Johnny Evans alongside Maguire. We had Dalot playing at left back. It's a struggle right now. And all it is, you know, the victory is there. And, you know, it still puts them in touch with that top area of the league table. And you hope, you know, if you're a Man United fan, that they can find some form and maybe Varane can get back into the side and they can get some injured players back and find some rhythm because, you know, again, Fulham are not in great shakes. They're not looking like scoring in the attacking areas. They're struggling in that regard. But United won the game. They won the game. And the scenes from the side, I don't think we've ever seen Erik ten Hag smile like that. He was smiling and the celebrations were there because of that little bit of brilliance from Bruno Fernandes. But again, it was kind of scrappy and we're kind of writing different headlines, Rob, to be honest with you. In the last kind of 5 minutes, I'm like, okay, this is another disappointment. Yeah. But the goal came and that does paper over, which I got to say is still many, many cracks at the club. And until this piece of ownership with Jim Ratcliffe, where he's reportedly going to change the football structure, you know, I don't know if it's wise the current decision makers making any decisions until Ratcliffe, if it's right that he is going to have control of the football side, let him come in and start making some changes. But again, that keeps the pressure away from Ten Hag for a week or two. But Bruno, you know, much criticised, Rob, much maligned a little bit about his attitude, his body language. Does that bother you, mate? Do you think he should be stripped of the captaincy as others have suggested?
No, I mean, it seems to be a bit of a theme, mainly coming from the UK, of former Manchester United players who say, you know, that's not how we would have or wouldn't be acceptable. I think Bruno's one of those players, Rob. He's sometimes on the edge of games. It's his personality. But I'll tell you what, every now and then when the club needs big moments, he's come up with them, got whether the goals and assists. Another, I mean, this is huge for Ten Hag. They lose that game at the weekend, Rob. It's proper starting to pile on. Yeah. So it was about the win, as you say. Does it give me any more good feelings about United being top four? Not particularly. No. When I look at other teams, I still think they're behind. But if they can just keep nicking wins, they could put a run together like I think they did against, was it Brentford a few weeks ago? And then they put a little run together and started to climb up the league. A couple of people I wanted to mention, Rob. Rasmus Højlund, the young centre-forward who got taken off and looked really disappointed.
Yeah.
I really feel sorry for this kid, by the way.
Yeah.
That seven Premier League games now, no goals. He's had a bit of a back injury. He's coming to a team that's dysfunctional. He's coming to a team and a club that's all over the place at the moment. He's not getting chances created for him. We'll come to Anthony next because he's on my list. Mm. It's a tough one for him, Rob, and it's almost like he's going to play himself almost out the side onto the bench if goals don't come. And, you know, as great as potential as he is, you need a centre-forward who's going to at least look like he's going to find the back of the net. Mm.
Yeah, that's right, Rob. And I think in an ideal world, you know, he's won a 20 to come into games, play a little bit, come out, and there'll be somebody else that's there, maybe playing. I don't think Anthony Martial is probably established enough, is dominant enough to be that main guy for Rasmus to come in now and again and get some experience. To ask him to be the main man up there week after week is difficult, and I'm totally with you. And even now, and I know he will hate to experience it, it might be an idea to sit him on the bench for a game or two. Okay, let's go again. Because you don't want him to get bogged down and go again. Like, and it starts to affect
good
your confidence.
Shout, like, get seven, 8 games out, right, and then you start again. Another run now.
Another excitement.
Maybe get one in two and three and all that.
The goals he scored in the Champions League look quality. Look quality, some of his little finishes and stuff. So, yeah, that's one part of it. And Anthony, Rob, I mean, I've said about Anthony, where do we go with him, Rob? There's reports they're trying to. There was a report about a potential swap deal to move Anthony out of Manchester United. I mean, it was a lot of money. It was $100 million.
There's no product, Rob. For $100 million player, there's no end product. And if you're Rasmus Højlund at the top of the pitch, you want some people out there who are going to give you an opportunity, mate, who are going to slide you through, who are going to get to the byline, who are going to put a couple of balls on the near post and I can make a run.
Yep.
He's getting none of that.
No.
And I tell you, I think he needs sitting his backside on the bench for a little while now. Yeah. I think he's had his looks. I think he's three or four games, take a look at it, have a rethink and come back sharp again.
Yeah. I mean, maybe...
Just one, Rob, was Mason Mount as well.
Go on, then.
Well, with Mason Mount, that we go away to Fulham, I play McTominay and Eriksen. Eriksen's a lovely footballer and we appreciate all that he does. But he's aging now, and we spent a load of money on Mason Mount. We buy him from Chelsea. He's a big, important piece of the jigsaw. And then he's on the bench, mate, and he comes on, like, late on. And just doesn't... I don't know. It doesn't feel right.
OK, well... OK, so this is my thought on it. Mason Mount should be in a team somewhere, OK? That's what my... I'm like, Mason Mount, really like him as a player. Yep, it's been a difficult move in a difficult situation with this team. But he's a good player, should be in the side. Then I'm like, look at the team sheet. Well, how are they going to do that? And because Scott McTominay is the only player right now, he's a top scorer, for goodness sake, at Manchester United, Scott McTominay. So it wouldn't make sense to restrict him and pull him back. So who's going to sit? Casemiro's out injured, Rob. Amrabat? Maybe you bring Amrabat back in and you find a way. Maybe you drop Antony. You push out Bruno to the right, which I don't like to do, but enabling.
Get him in the team,
you have Amrabat and that pushes out Eriksen, and you have McTominay and you have Mason Mount between Mount, McTominay and Amrabat, because he's the only one who can hold a little bit now. Yeah. Bruno to the right. And then, you know, Rashford, when he comes back on the left-hand side, I think he had a heavy knock into this game, was not available. And then, you know, your striker, whether it's Martial. Right, yeah. So I like Mount. He hadn't turned into a bad footballer, Rob, over a few months. And I know he didn't start great, but you've got to get him back in the side, haven't they? Would you put him back in?
Exactly. I would, because I think you've got to, having spent that money, Rob, and know his ability, you've got to persevere and find a way. But again, I've talked about structure and the system not being right. And so he's in his head, I'm not sure if he's in the right space at the moment to go in that team and dictate games like we can. He's a guy we've seen for England and Chelsea run big games, mate. Absolutely dictate games. But maybe it's a sign of how things are going at Manchester United. Just one last one in here, and I know we've got to move on. I just thought, Robin, we should give a mention. I just thought the Manchester United fans, by the way, deserve a little mention.
Yeah, it's
good.
They
filled a spot out at Fulham. They didn't often make a noise to get behind the team. They've had some terrible years of ownership and bad buys and bad management and all the things that are so obviously wrong at the football club.
Yeah.
But they don't often still support this team through thick and thin. And they're there each week, Rob, and selling out and still giving the numbers and still backing the team. So I just thought it was one of those when, you know, you saw Ten Hag and Bruno and all the players going up to the fans at the end of the game. I thought, well played, by the way, because these fans haven't half stuck by this team through some really difficult times.
No, they have. And I think a London game, I think all these big clubs, Rob, I know we have one at Middlesbrough, they have a supporters club south. And I've got to imagine the Man United supporters club south that will go, of course, I'll go to all the Southern games. There's a ton of them. That's going to be a big old supporters club south for Man United. So, I agree, though, Rob. I mean, they're still driving. And to be fair, whenever we've gone to Old Trafford, I mean, it's a good atmosphere. And them fans are just desperate to get behind their team. And I think they do really, really well in terms of not jumping on the back of players and managers in the past. And it's a good shout. It's a good shout.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter TruGreen, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. TruGreen is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let TruGreen do your lawn care. Visit TruGreen.com, TRUGREEN.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
All right, let's moving on. And when you're talking about Anthony Robb and lacking of end product, we have a player here that we've got to talk about. And me and Tim Howard have just done a little tactics session. Again, you'll find that on NBC Sports YouTube channel on about Jeremy Doku and the impact that he's had at the club, but of course the impact that he had in this game against Bournemouth. 6-1 was. He scores the first goal, he assists four others, Doku Robb, and in terms of a wide player that we know that Pep likes his wingers to have the ability to dribble past the last guy. Riyad Mahrez did it for some years on the other side. Bernardo Silva, a little bit less so, but can dribble past. Sterling dribbled by when he was at City. And Grealish does it a little differently on the left-hand side, Rob. And that could be now could be a problem for Jack Grealish, because Doku looks at 21 years of age. What a signing and what a performance, Rob.
Cool. Well, it also contrasts to what you say. To Anthony had done the same thing, to recruitment, Rob. To, you know, like that line of you know, got to get used to settling in the system. This guy's plug and play, mate.
Plug and play.
Left side, right side, with pace, with speed. Almost brings another dynamic to City. Mahrez was great on the, like, he looks to play with, you know, with that left foot and then turns you and chops it onto his right. Now, this guy's speed, I saw Pep had said after the game, his speed over the first 5 metres is as quick as anybody's ever seen.
Right.
He's just got this ability. And then he said at the end of that, which he said is the bit that sets him now starting to set him apart, he makes so many good decisions.
He is making good decisions.
So, you know, gets to the byline, and how many times do we see people just smash it over? Or, you know, think of Traore's and people like that who, you know, he's got that pace, he can get to the byline. But then, you know, I thought the little roll back to Bernardo Silva was a lovely little example of that. Like, he twists and turns a defender, you know, twists his blood and then just rolls one back into the path of Bernardo Silva to smash into the back of the net. I mean, he's going to be a special player, mate. He's plug and play, he's 13 games, already looks settled, already looks confident. He's going to get bigger, he's going to get better under Pep, you know, learning and becoming more mature technically. It's frightening what they do. And to think, Rob, he was, I don't know, it was about £55 million, so I don't know, $70 million.
$70 million, yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
It's amazing.
He was out there, mate. He was out there, wasn't he?
Listen, like, the others are out there. Like, Matheus Nunes was out there. Like Guardiola was out there. Like, Ruben Dias. They got
Neto,
a little slot in the market where they do great. I mean, just finishing up on Doku, Rob. Mm. You think about that, right? You think about that performance. It had everything from a wide player. It had the goal part where he plays a 1-2. So cleverness to find a 1-2 to get in behind and finish the ball off. He had the dribbling part where he's got... Who was it? One of the defenders, Basham, was it? Or was all over the place as he pulls the ball back.
Still in hospital getting his blood straightened out, mate.
I know. Twisted blood from him. And then the assist he makes for Bruno Fernandes, his little dink goal. It's a wonderful through ball from inside of his own half. So dribbling, creative 1-2 play, scoring goals and making long assisting passes. I mean, like, well done. Like, you can't do any more than that in a game. So City, another great pickup. And, you know, and a great performance from him and Bernardo Silva, Rob. And his little goal was a little thing of class as well.
Brilliant,
by the way, just, I ain't going to get into it, but even tactically, it was different again. You had Stones and Akanji, Rob. They didn't go into midfield. It wasn't that tactical approach. Kyle Walker was bombing down the right-hand side, and Nathan Ake on the left, and the two centre-backs stayed where they were. So they don't always do that bit where they come in. I think I put the lineup like they were going to probably do that. You never know with Pep. You never know his approach within any tactical system, but you know he gets it right nearly all the time. So excellent performance again, 6-1. I mean, it's hard to see anybody stopping him.
Yeah. Well, only slight down to anything that might give some hope that there was a bit of an injury to Erling Haaland, mate. He came off at half-time. They're saying a bit of an ankle.
Okay.
Don't know how bad it is. And they've got young boys on Tuesday, and then they go to Chelsea next weekend. So, but as you say, you know, somebody comes out, somebody goes in and, you know, takes the most of the opportunity. That's where City are. Mm. OK, my friend, let's move it to a few other, other results from the weekend. Sheffield United got their first Premier League win of the season. Cameron Archer with the first goal. Belgrade got one back for Wolves. And then Norwood with a disputed penalty. Again, Gary O'Neill not happy. Fabio Silva, I think, was with foul.
Bulldog, I think it was
in the box. Bit soft again, having had one against Hee Chang Wang last weekend. Similar situation. But Norgaard smashes it into the top of the net. Sheffield United get their first win, and a little bit of pressure ease off Paul Heckenbottom, mate.
Yeah, I'm kind of pleased for him because I think they have. Yeah. I mean, I know they've had a couple of bad ones, but I think they've been quite competitive for most of the games, and great scenes there from them with the first win of the season for their point of view. Nottingham Forest, Rob, what a good game that was. We just finished that on this Sunday. 2-0 against Aston Villa. A game that, again, as an analyst and a pundit, I'm thinking, well, Villa are so good right now. You know, and I know Villa can be strong at home with that great support that they've got, but that overcome Villa. And they ain't quite as good away from home. And the manager, Unai Emery, said about it. I made a note in going into the weekend.
Happy was he,
They've got to improve away from home. And we saw it again. And, you know, of course he's done a brilliant job, but this was a day the Nottingham Forest, you know, finding ways with good decisions, big decisions from the referee, from the manager, Rob. He dropped the goalkeeper. Matt Turner, of course, US internationals out the side now, made a mistake last weekend.
Yeah.
He changed a back five to a back four. He dropped two of the defenders from last week's loss against Liverpool. So big calls, different system.
Yeah.
And I still, when you see big Taiwo Awoniyi playing up front, Rob, when you've got Gibbs White and Elanga, that for a team that
it's
might.
It's a threat, isn't it? Yeah.
That's a proper threat in different sorts of players with pace, with creativity in Gibbs White. You got some steady eddies behind in terms of the midfield players. But I'm still surprised at the victory. But that was well-deserved, comfortable from Nottingham Forest. It shoves them up the league, Rob. It kind of shoves them into 12th spot now
on
13 points.
12th spot, 13
well
points.
Well done, Steve Cooper. And I just started to think that they were just like, oh, he still can't get away from that that bottom area of the league. That's such a big win for them. And so well done, Nottingham Forest.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love Steve Cooper, always a man with a plan. We had a great London Capital Derby the weekend at the GTEC, mate. Brentford 3, West Ham 1. And, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking earlier about Luton, almost like Brentford are the blueprint, aren't they, for Luton? I mean, you know, to come into the league, obviously their recruitment's incredible, but to find your way, to work with your manager and to stay. I mean, what a great game it was. Mopay scores his first goal in, I think, 14 months, 36 games. Kudos replies with a beauty for West Ham. What a player he is, by the way, mate. He looks like he's proper business.
Yeah.
Bowen poaches one at the far post. West Ham go 2-1 up. Mavropanos with it from a free kick. Diverts one into his own net. And then Nathan Collins gets his first goal for Brentford to give him a 3-2 win. And Thomas Frank in this group just... I can't say enough good things about them, mate. You know, it's a West Ham team that spent more money, that's obviously got higher ambitions, and you know, it's a big London club. But Brentford, they punch above their weight, mate. It's incredible what this manager does, what this group of players does, what this football club have done from getting promoted. And they find themselves in ninth spot, in 16 points already this season. And you just sense that there's not going to be a worry about relegation, despite losing a 20-goal striker at the start of the season for half the run. That's how good they are.
Yeah, I just thought they'd struggle more without him. I really did. I thought that they were so reliant on Ivan Toney, Rob, last year for the goals and the victories and the points. And that's just not been the case. Others have stepped up. I do like the back line, whether it's four or the five. I do like the midfield. And it's a victory for steady eddies. It's a victory for good pros, good attitudes, hard-working players. You know, I'd have slotted in that team, and you know, I'd have enjoyed playing in that side. Or you know, you're all in it together.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good story, good manager,
good eggs,
and good
yeah.
recruitment.
Yeah, good
Again,
story.
It goes back to recruitment. So good, you know, brilliant. Come from behind victory for Brentford at home. They're pretty strong at home. Next game, Rob. Everton 1, Brighton 1. Mikulenko scores in the 7th minute, and then there's Ashley Young own goal. A little later for Brighton to bring it back to 1-1. I'm just thinking, you know, for Everton, they're at that point, it's kind of late in the game, like, what, it's 84th minute, there's the Brighton goal. You know, you just feel Everton are kind of close from really pulling away from that area, but they're not pulling away. They're still in and around. There is a bit of a gap there, and I have enjoyed more what I've seen from Everton. But, again, the only thing I'd say, Rob, if you can remember the... And it's just a coaching point that I remember I learned a lesson from Terry Venables. Terry Venables was a brilliant coach at our club for a little while. And I remember him said as a fullback, because I played fullback under him for a couple of times. And he basically said as a fullback, you either really want to be really in the face of the winger, or if you're not there, you want to be really back into the penalty box in the front space or picking up somebody. And Ashley Young was in between, and he called it no man's land of I wasn't affecting the cross and I'm not affecting a ball into the box. I don't know. It's just a little coaching point that I recognise from that. I'm not saying that that's the reason why it deflected and looped into it. It was a fluky goal. I didn't see what he was doing there. And of course he got red carded the other day. Just a tough couple of games for Ashley Young, who's been a brilliant pro. And Everton, you just get one point out of it. Just one point.
Yeah, a bit of disappointment. Obviously, a home win would have been brilliant, 3 points. But you just get the sense that his influence starting to get there. This club, the players are becoming a bit more accountable, and get the sense that I know they're only sitting on 11 points at the moment, which is only 5 clear of the bottom three. But just get a sense that his ways are coming. I'm going to take you to Burnley Crystal Palace, mate, just before we get off. And the reason I'm going to go there is a 2-0 win away for Crystal Palace. So Burnley, I think 6 straight defeats now at home, first time in Premier League history for Vincent Kompany's team. So not quite the start they wanted from a team that dominated the Championship, 101 points, and played some great football. Have definitely found it more difficult this time around. But goals for Jeffrey Slupp and Tyrick Mitchell for Crystal Palace late on to give them a 2-0 win. And I'm going to go for my underappreciated performer of the week, mate. And
Waiting
he's a Crystal Palace player. And if I gave you a chance to guess him, we'd be here till probably next week before you'd get my guy. And it's Jordan Ayew, my friend, the 32-year-old forward for
Steady
Crystal
Eddie.
Palace. And I know you'd give me that reaction. 1 goal, 3 assists this season, assisted on the goal for Slupp. Since he signed from Swansea, I think he's been top scorer twice in 2 of the seasons. He's, as quote from the great Roy Hodgson, he said he's the most reliant, consistent players he's ever worked with. Whether you're playing him left side, centrally, right side, in midfield, he gives his all. Sometimes, Rob, the football clubs have superstars. You have your Salahs and you have your Haalands and that. And you need your Jordan Ayews. And to nick a phrase from our Rebecca Lowe, who talked about fruit salads, and that there's a melon in a fruit salad, and the melon packs it out, and melon some...
It's a filler.
Jordan Ayew is a melon player. Every time you see Jordan Ayew, think of melon. He's a filler. He does a great job. When Zaha's getting the headlines, Ayew's in the team doing a job. When Eze and Elise are getting the headlines... or using the team doing the job. He's just signed a new contract to 2025. Somebody who never gets any recognition. If you think of Palace, he'd be the last person you talk of. Jordan, are you? Jordan Mellon, are you? My underappreciated performer.
Oh, gosh.
Of the week.
I mean, he isn't really loved. I mean, I hear the arguments.
He's not mango,
really, really
he's not pineapple.
No, he's not pineapple. He's not strawberry or blueberry.
He's not mango. He's not.
No, he's not.
No,
he is melon.
No, he's melon. But I tell you, loves him. Roy Hodgson loves him, mate. Yeah. And if he's good enough for Roy, he's good enough for Robbie.
Good shout, mate. Listen, not a bad shout. Fair play to Jordan Ayew. He's a steady Eddie performer. Just before we get off, Rob, listen, we do try and bang out the podcast on a Sunday with all the stories, of course, there. We do have a game on Monday, Rob. It's Spurs at home versus Chelsea. Let's just quickly get a prediction from Robbie Earle in terms of what you think is going to happen.
Yeah. I see a home victory for Spurs. I know Arsenal have lost their unbeaten run, so the other North London team will want to keep theirs. I just see the reason that the change I've seen in this team, Rob, is the trust that the manager has given the players, and the players are embracing that trust and giving you know, being able to express themselves way better than in any regime they've had since Pochettino was last there, I would say. And I would dare say, I was thinking about it, Rob, that there's probably games that Spurs might lose under Postecoglou, and that's not happening this season so far, but there's games they might lose that they would enjoy more than these games they won under Jose and Conte.
Yeah,
that's how different the football is, and the, you know, having the ball, Rob, and being able to play, and the manager trusting in you and not saying, "Oh, let's sit back and let's, you know, let's not give anything away." I think because of that, because of the form, I just think they'll have too much for Chelsea at home.
Yeah, I do too.
How are you going?
Yeah, I do. I think there's a couple of goals. I think it might be 2-0 to Tottenham. I mean, two new managers at new football clubs, lots of newness, lots of change. Half the team is different at Spurs. Really kind of different. The players that didn't play under the previous manager, and lots of change at Chelsea. I feel like this the Spurs project's way advanced. There's kind of a real set play already. I'm excited to see the tactical situation. We know that there's very, very... lots of interchange, lots of fluid movement, and it's not the same at Chelsea right now. They're still building, they're still finding their way. They're still struggling to take the chances that they do create, and they will get opportunities against Spurs that flood their players forward. I just don't know whether Chelsea's midfield, Rob, when you think of some of the wide players and the flair players, are ready to kind of maybe they are to pinch work, in and work to stop that Man City's kind of fluid football that ultimately gets it through to mostly Madison, that slips it through to Heung-min Son. So I do give the advantage for Spurs. Again, it should be a brilliant game. I'm in the studio again with Tim tomorrow. We can't wait for it. The atmosphere is great right now at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Of course, the reunion. Do you think, just finally, Rob, is Poch going to get a nice warm reception, or the fact that he's gone to Chelsea, is that going to overshadow it?
No, I think he'll get a warm reception, mate. I think what he did at football, how he turned it around, how he grew the ambition and the style of football. Not since then, as I don't think a Tottenham manager's been loved in the same way. Yeah. Jose and Conte didn't have that kind of relationship. They love Pochettino back at Spurs, and I think he'll get the... And I'm pleased that he gets that, Rob, because he did. Do you think it was a middle-ish table team... But he took after going from Southampton and got them to Champions League finals and
should have probably won a
Premier League title.
Yeah, you
know, some of the football and the players they developed was great stuff. So, look forward to that one, mate. But listen, what a weekend we've had in the Premier League. City hit six. Arteta's sick of VAR. Manchester United get their sixth win of the Premier League season. Take a bit of pressure off Erik ten Hag. Liverpool left it late against Luton, and Sheffield United got their first win of this Premier League season. We'll be back next weekend when we'll look back at match week 12 when Chelsea host champions Manchester City at the Bridge. That's on Sunday, November the 12th. But for now, I'm Earl, he's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.